from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, in the span of about 40 years, Prince released 39 albums, won 7 Grammy Awards, and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We remember the music legend next on Forum after this.
Sometimes it snows in April. Sometimes I feel so bad, so bad. Sometimes I wish that life was never ending. And all good things they say never last.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The world lost a music legend yesterday when Prince died at the age of 57, the genius behind scores of iconic songs, including Purple Rain, Controversy, and Sign of the Times. Prince had a famous falsetto, and his work crossed and blended musical genres from funk to new wave. In this hour of Forum, we'll talk with local musicians about the artist born Prince Rogers Nelson in Minneapolis, and we want to hear from you. What's your reaction to his death, and what impact did Prince's music have on you? The number to call to join the conversation is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org, post your thoughts on our Facebook page, on Twitter, or on our website, kqed.org/forum. Let me tell you who is joining us in studio right now. Gabe Moline is the music editor and curator for KQED Arts. Good morning, Gabe Moline.
Good to be here.
And also joining us is Boots Riley. He's the lead vocalist for The Coup, a filmmaker, an Oakland activist. Thanks for being here, Boots Riley.
Thanks for having me.
And Adam Tease is with us as well. He's a trombonist, a band leader. He founded San Francisco's music collective called Jazz Mafia and is the director of SF Jazz's Monday Night Band. Good morning, Adam Tease.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here. I want to start with you, Adam Tease, if I could. I know you do a tribute to Prince every year, pretty much.
Yeah, it's something that I guess since college I've been doing it, so since the mid-90s. And I just thought it would be fun to get a bunch of good musicians together and play some of our favorite Prince songs. And it ended up being a lot more than just something for the musicians. Obviously, all our friends loved it. And so it was this tradition that I've tried to carry on. I don't do it every year, but sometimes we'll do it many times or a couple times a year, just if it works out.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, because since we're not like a cover band, you know, we have to get together and work all this stuff out. So I think after a long time, it's like, well, let's do a few shows. But it's more about just experiencing the joy of playing that music and not really wanting to become a cover band. Those are cool. but I think me and my friends just really enjoy getting to do it once in a while.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you what your reaction was to the news of Prince's death.
I mean, obviously thinking it was a hoax for a second. I know a lot of people who, you know, I was probably just wishful thinking, but you know, Prince kind of is always trying to do something different or new. And so for about maybe 10 seconds, I think, thinking that and then just sinking into, okay, well, this is reality. And but pretty much, I think like a lot of people, I've just been kind of numb. And I have been just thinking about how much he accomplished in his lifetime. I mean, everybody's saying he obviously could have done, or he would have done a lot more. And I think everybody thought he would live to, you know, a much older age, but it's just so incredible how much his body of work and all of his collaborations, I'm sure we'll talk more about all that. But to me, that's to look at the bright side, you know, and that's what I've been trying to do and to keep that in mind.
Boots Riley, what about you? Where were you when you learned that he'd died or got that news?
A friend of mine texted me just saying that she was crying like her father died. And I know her, so I knew what she. I knew that must have been what was going on, and so that was just that. And you know, I immediately thought like I had a few chances to meet Prince, and I didn't because I didn't want him to be a regular person. You know, I didn't want to. You know, well, partly because of that, but partly because I didn't want him to get mad at me or some sort of weird thing, and then I'd listen to his music and know that that was the dude that said this stuff, or you know what I'm saying?
Totally.
Because so, he was more than just a regular guy to you. Like you
of
had
course,
this.
I mean, to everybody.
What so, was he yeah. to you?
You know, definitely he is. His music came at a time in my life and a lot of people's lives where you're trying to figure yourself out and. And the music that he was putting out at that time, this is the early 80s, became, you know, part of an identity. And you know, I think that I posted something like this yesterday. I think his music was musical arguments to the goading us to live free. Right. And there's something that I've taken from that, definitely musically and aesthetics, I've taken a lot of that, but there's something to the spirit that I've taken from that and put into my artwork, and it which is this optimism that isn't just saying how messed up things are, but giving this sense that things are changing. So, you know, he had these songs like Party Up, and it was a very much an anti-war song. And he had songs that were declaring at a certain time a sexual freedom that didn't, you know, especially like for kids where no matter what's going on with you, it's really about figuring out how to conform and figuring out what club or what group or what group to be in. And he had, you know, a freeing impact on a lot of people that I actually think that younger folks that started listening to his music in the 90s and then listened to his 80s music later don't actually understand as much because, you know, he came, I think like his closest predecessor was like Rick James, right? And Rick James definitely had like tight jeans and, you know, long hair and people were like, what's up with him? But his stuff, he still like went over extra macho with his image, you know, like, oh yeah, I might have long hair, but I'll, you know, kick Kenneth, or I don't know, but I'll beat you up or whatever. And then, you know, when he talked about sexuality with women, Rick James, it was like she's a super freak. But Prince wrote songs that where the women were sexual, but they weren't judged for being sexual, and that where he took those things. So
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I think that it influenced a lot of people to be rebellious in various ways.
You mentioned Party Up. I'd like to play a little bit of that. That's from 1980. That's Party Up. That Gabe Molina's from his album Dirty Mind, right? That was sort of where you first really started to see the Prince that we would later see in full form later.
Yeah. And, you know, Prince was kind of constantly evolving. But, you know, with this album in particular, he kind of took the, you know, the James Brown aesthetic of rhythm and then added sort of a classic American songwriting to it. You know, a lot of his hits are 1-4-5 songs. You know, the chord changes are, you know, almost like folk music in a way. And layering that on top of this heavy backbeat rhythm with bass lines was sort of the template for what he did for the next 10 or 12 years.
Do you remember the first Prince song, Adam Thies, that really hit you?
Yeah. I was Raspberry Beret, and it's I was going to I was with my stepbrother, who was kind of one of my biggest musical influences. I didn't have music in my family or anything like that, but my parents got remarried when I was around like fifth grade, something like that, and my stepbrother, I just would look to him for everything. And there was a certain aesthetic of music that he was into. We were listening to a lot of like skate rock and punk and new wave stuff. And we were listening to the radio, driving in the car, and Prince came on, Raspberry Beret came on. And I was about to be like, oh, this is weak. Prince is weak, or, you know, whatever I would have said. It's a closed-minded thing. And right when I was about to say something, my brother's like, man, I don't really like everything about Prince. You know, there's a lot of certain things about him. Like maybe wearing women's clothing or whatever it was. I don't remember what he said his music, he's a really great musician. And, you know, whatever he said, it made me think about, because I was just getting into music and thinking about like pop stars, and that some of them could really be serious musicians. I'd never considered that. I always just thought like there was people who play in symphony halls or whatever, and then there's the people who make a bunch of money on TV, and it's very, you know, cut and dry. And so I buttoned my lip. I didn't say anything. I just kind of like shook my head. Like, yeah, Prince is great. And from then on, I just always listened to his music and music in general a little bit different, because it was such a, I caught myself being closed-minded. And that was one thing that I always prided myself in, you know, when I started listening to music at a young age, is I like eclectic stuff and I'm into everything. So, I really started following him, you know, just like when it would come on the radio. And then one day in high school, I just bought every record I could find.
So it was really in high school that it just really became serious in terms of listening to him and really dissecting his music.
Yeah, I was learning Darling Nikki as a cover in a band, like a high school band. One of the other guys wanted to bring it in. And I was like, this is really different. It's interesting. And I'm not talking about the lyrics. I probably didn't even listen to the lyrics for the first, you know, month of playing the tune. Just musically, it really was something that I thought was fresh and exciting. And by this point, Purple Rain had been out for 10 years or something, you know. So it was just all these little discoveries, just purely from a musician side. And then there's a lot of other things that I started appreciating about his music once I started getting more into it.
Again, we're talking about Prince, who died yesterday at his recording complex in Minnesota. The number to call if you want to share your memories of Prince or his impact on you is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. We invite you to be part of this conversation. And let's go to Kirsten in Mountain View. Hi, Kirsten. Hi, are you there, Kirsten? Oh,
I'm here. Sorry.
You wanted to share something about your connection to Prince.
More of a question than a comment. So I grew up in the Twin Cities, went to high school when Purple Rain came out, and Prince was just such a huge influence on me and my peers at such a kind of coming of age time, and really he, you know, explored so many different things, gender issues, lots of sexuality issues that was so new, right, in the mid-80s. And there was a bit of commentary yesterday on NPR around how what Prince did, he could sort of do because he was in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, that there's some, you know, when people in California hear that I'm from Minnesota, they sort of think of it as a backwater. But really, Minneapolis is a very progressive, liberal place. And so I would just appreciate any comments that you have around how Prince could do what he was doing because he was where he was.
Kirsten, thanks. Gabe Moline?
I'm not I'm not sure if I can speak to the geography of the Twin Cities and how that was possible, being isolated from New York and L.A. But, I mean, really, when you think about Prince and some of the things he was singing, like controversy, am I black or white? Am I gay or straight? I Would Die for You starts out with him singing, I'm not a woman. I'm not a man. I am something that you'll never understand.
Mm-hmm. But he's supposed to be Jesus in that song.
Boots
yeah,
Riley.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
but these are hits that, like, these were hits during the Reagan era, like when Jerry Falwell was still, you know, a guiding force for America. It was very subversive. And Boots hinted at this earlier, that his music and his songs gave people a freedom where, you know, it gave them a framework for their lives where no framework really existed.
Yeah.
And that was very important.
It helped people embrace their weirdness and all its glory, basically, to feel accepted. I think you're right. That's why people love him and feel connected to him. And I can't help but feel like there are echoes of this conversation from the death of David Bowie and the conversation we had around that and how, you know, artists who allow people to be truly who they are, you know, have a special place, I think, in people's hearts. We put out to our listeners a question on social media to fill in the blank, Prince, you were my blank. And one listener says, Prince, you were my king, the one who showed me to be who I am, to funk it up and to have love for one another. I'll never, ever forget. Never, never. And another listener tweets, Prince, you were my sex god. And so, yeah, sexuality was a really big part of his music. I mean, it was part of what really set him apart. You know, we played Party Up from Dirty Mind. But as you said, he tackled some really both explicit and challenging topics like incestuous relationships or oral sex. But he also just asked everybody to kind of look at something that they weren't wanting to look at mm-hmm. before.
And I would say, you know, part of, you know, in answering the caller, that was he able to do it? From articles I read, it wasn't really that easy. Like, he got an opening slot on Rolling Stones, and from articles I read, people were spitting at him because he was wearing a G-string and, mm-hmm. you know, and high heels and, you know, in concert at a Rolling Stones concert, which, you know, whatever, aside from what the musicians in the Rolling Stones are, the fans were not necessarily that open-minded. And so it wasn't that thing that there was a pathway opened up easily and he just went down. He made the path.
Yeah, I think that comes up a lot when people dissect the risks he took to do Purple Rain. It's a crazy story, isn't it, Adam Thies, behind the making of that 1984 film? I mean, there was very little money. It was a cast that had never acted, a director that had never directed.
Yeah. Yeah, the director thing is probably the big one. I mean, Boots would know more about that realm, but he just says, yeah, I want to have a movie and I'm going to fire you, you know, to his manager. He's like, I'm going to fire you if you don't find me a movie. And it's just like, people would think you're cuckoo, right? But, I mean, he had some cred before that. It's not like he was a nobody, but just because you have a few records out doesn't mean that people are going to sink all this money and investment into you. So it was, I mean, just that alone, just Purple Rain alone is a total, total huge achievement.
And from what I read,
Boots is Riley.
The film, the Warner Brothers didn't think that white people would like Purple Rain. Mm. And so that was, and it wasn't until they tested it that they said, oh, wait, maybe his stuff has some
crossover.
Could get out there.
Yeah, I think 1999 and Little Red Corvette helped people feel like maybe he had some crossover appeal. But the fact that they were so worried about it, I think, really speaks to how segregated the music industry was back in the 80s around what, you know, white artists could do, what black artists could do, and what audiences would embrace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think he must have known that putting out his whole persona in a big way was part of the equation. When I saw him at the piano and a microphone tour at the Oakland Arena, and when he did Purple Rain, the song, right before he hit that those last notes, he like looked up at the sky and it looked like he was going to cry. And he felt like something about it. He knows, like, okay, that's the song. That's the time that gave me everything else.
I feel like we just got to play Purple Rain right now.
I never meant to call you when you sorrow. I never meant to call you when you pain. I'm the one who wants that I see you laughing.
You know, something that is incredible about this song, other than it just being a great song on its own, is that this song, the version of this song that became a number one hit, was recorded live in one take, and it was the very first public performance of the song.
Wow.
I mean, if you think about pop hits today, they're like workshopped for months, they're rehearsed for weeks, they'll do like 300 takes, and they'll splice together vocals and drums and guitar and vowels of certain words to make a perfectly manufactured pop masterpiece. And this was just the most natural thing. I mean, it was the first time they played it live.
Well, he's been described as remarkably disciplined, like just a workaholic, someone who would, you know, pound it out before performing something so that it would be almost perfect.
Yeah. They did add a guitar. The guitar solo, I think, was overdubbed, and then Boots was talking.
Really, it looked like, it, when I saw the video of it, it seems like they just shortened it.
Oh, okay. And they took out a verse of it. But other than that, it was just the way that it was played at First Avenue.
That's pretty incredible. Again, we're talking about the legendary music genius Prince, who died yesterday in Minnesota. We're talking with Boots Riley, lead vocalist for The Coup, a filmmaker, a local activist in Oakland. About Prince, we're talking with Gabe Moline, the music editor and curator for KQED Arts. And we're talking with Adam Thiest, a trombonist, a bassist, a band leader. He founded San Francisco's music collective called Jazz Mafia in 2000 and is the director of SF Jazz's Monday Night Band. He also does a tribute to Prince every year. We're also asking our listeners to join the conversation. We've asked them to respond to a prompt on social media, Prince, You Were My. And Leilani writes, Prince, You Were My Guiding Light. Martha says, Prince, you were my therapist. And Alma writes, Prince, you were the soundtrack of my youth. We go to more of your reflections after the break. This is Forum. I'm Mina King.
In France, a skinny man died of a big disease with a little name. By chance, his girlfriend came across a needle, and soon she did the same. At home, there are 17-year-old boys, and their idea of fun is being in a gang called the Disciples, high on crack, toting a machine gun.
Welcome back to Forum. This is Mina Kim. We're talking about Prince, the impact he had on culture, on music, on musicians, and on us. And I'd like to go to our calls. Let's go to David in Hillsborough. Hi, David.
How you doing?
Well, what's your story? How did Prince touch you?
Well, I was talking to a producer, and, you know, I had gone on a date, and she wanted to see the movie. I didn't. Not a Prince fan. And just like your one of your guests there was talking about, I didn't realize that I was that close-minded to music. And not only did he, you know, do that and kind of shift my perspective, but there was just something about him that I didn't think he was intentionally trying to do that, but because he was just being true to himself, you know, that's what struck a chord, at least in me, and from people that I was with, you know, they were all kind of moved that way. And we all became Prince fans after that, that's for certain.
Well, David, thanks for sharing that memory. Let's go to Patricia in San Francisco. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. I was so devastated by the news yesterday. Like, when I was a kid growing up, my parents were really strict. Like, I wasn't allowed to watch TV. I wasn't allowed to go to the movies. And I remember sneaking off to a friend's house to watch Purple Rain. And it was, you know, Prince was probably everything my parents were trying to shield me from. And it just, it broke open my entire world and, like, shaped everything about my taste in music. You know, it was just like, I listened to Purple Rain every chance I could as a kid, and it just is the soundtrack of my youth. And I just wanted to say, like, we're hosting a tribute dance party for Prince tonight at Southern Exposure, which is at 20th in Alabama in the Mission, 9 to 11 p.m. It's free. Everybody's welcome. Dance Prince into the afterworld.
Well, Patricia, thanks so much for sharing your memory, for letting us know about that. You know, even if, whether you're a super fan of Prince or not, I think one of the other reasons that people feel connected to him is he also became, even though he was so cutting edge, he became required playing for like every wedding DJ.
It
was a shared enjoyment, I think, that people have, whether you know, you knew him intimately or his music intimately or not.
Yeah. Well, his music was very joyous. His music was just full of joy. You know, unlike a lot of pop stars, if you think about the idea of a star giving off light, most of them seem to suck light towards them. Prince gave it off. I mean, Prince wanted you to be happy. He wanted to hold your hand. He wanted to be a shoulder to cry on. He wanted you to dance all night long. And I don't know, it's just, it seems like such a special gift to be in a world where Prince does that for you.
Boots Riley, that really reminds me of something that you've talked about, which is that getting people involved to do something revolutionary involves having fun, doing it in a positive way. It does not
involves people having an optimism that they can do something. And I'm not saying that that was Prince's goal at all, but I think what came across was that he had this passion. He really believed those songs. Now, you know, there are other technically talented musicians, and in great ways. But sometimes what happens to those musicians is they don't have a guiding passion that funnels all that energy. And that's what I think, besides the great skill at songwriting and the great musicianship, what attracts a lot of people to Prince is that, you know, he really believes what he's saying, that there is not some record label exec saying, you got to make this kind of song because, you know, this is what the kids are listening to. Now, I think later on he did start doing a little bit of that. But for a lot of the songs in that canon, it's this passion. It's not like, here's the hit that will work. It's, this is what you're going to listen to, and this is what I think. And sometimes that stuff was, you know, like, I'm listening to Sign of the Times, and, you know, he was very affected by just what was on the news. And, you know, so he had some messed up things that were like kind of pro-Reagan at certain times. Like he had the thing where the devil was trying to kill Reagan, and where then Ronnie talked to Russia before, don't feed left-wing guerrillas. And, you know, coming from someone like myself who is a communist who believes there should be a revolution here, I still really liked his work, and it still influenced me to do what I'm doing now. And that has a lot to do with him following his passion and putting forward that energy and optimism about the idea that you could change things, or the idea that things don't have to be the way that they are.
Yeah.
You know?
And you also mentioned the record label, any record label that tried to tell him what to do, I'm sure he'd take him to task. Gabe Malini famously had that controversy with Warner Brothers, right?
Yeah, he did. And, you know, like Bowie, he was sort of an early internet pioneer as far as music went. It wasn't successful, but he tried it. You know, he was always experimenting. And, you know, yesterday what happened to everybody is, you know, when a musician dies, you go to YouTube and you listen to their songs. And Prince famously issued immediate takedowns on any of his music that was on YouTube, so people couldn't do that. Now, I think that is really, I mean, he's the most famous example of someone who is protecting his copyright and not letting his music get out there for free. And I think it speaks to his passion about his songs that he wanted to protect them and he wanted to keep them special. And I think it worked.
Chris writes, there was a Prince song for every moment of my life. We shared a birthday, so I always felt a special connection to him. My late father loved his music, and growing up, all I had to do was listen to his music to remember my daddy. For me, I lost a part of my life that always made me get up and sing and dance and get happy. R.I.P., beautiful one. And let's go to Jason in Kansas. Hi, Jason.
Hello. Yeah. Prince provided a bond between myself and my older sister. She's 14 years older than me. I always admired her, and she was music is it was always close to her heart and thus close to mine. And I remember close to 30 years ago at spring break, I spent with her and watching his 86 film, Under the Cherry Moon. And in those 30 years since, Prince songs on the radio have not only brought, you know, good memories of her, but, you know, prompted me to pick up the phone and call her and tell her that I love her.
Oh.
So I'm sorry the world has lost Prince. I'm very grateful that we will always have his music, and I'll always have those reminders.
Jason, thanks. Thanks so much. Adam Thies, I saw you nodding when he was talking about Under the Cherry Moon.
Yeah, it's a really that period where Prince was starting to shift gears yet again. And I think the film doesn't really get a lot of props, but it's entertaining. But the record is it's such a different flavor in a lot of ways, you know, but it still has like the classic kind of, you know, it'll make you dance, but it has, you know, he's starting to get into the little more orchestral collaborations. He worked with this guy, Claire Fisher, who's, you know, an incredible orchestrator. And so anytime you hear those, like, you know, that orchestral string, those beautiful lush sounds coming in on those records starting from around then and going on for decades, actually, it was this guy, Claire Fisher. And it was just a really cool collaboration. That was another thing that when I heard that record, I just realized that this artist is evolving. He's trying new things and working with the best people that are out there. And that album has Sometimes It Snows in April, which is one of my favorite songs. And, you know, really, really odd timing.
Yeah, that he died in April.
Yeah.
Gabe Malini, speaking of shifting, that was one thing that people have also highlighted was the fact that he didn't, after Purple Rain and its incredible popularity and the fact that it kind of made him, right, he didn't milk it for, like, years. He shifted again within, you know, 6 or 7 months to a different sound. What did that do for him? What did that establish?
Well, it established his independence, and it, you know, he didn't ever want to be shackled to anything. There were whole tours where he would announce beforehand, I am not playing my hits on this tour, you know. You would go see him at some of his small club shows that he was so famous for, especially here in the Bay Area, the DNA Lounge, Ruby Sky, the Fillmore. He loved playing these small places. And you wouldn't get, you know, When Doves Cry. You know, you wouldn't get I Feel For You. And that is fine, because I think he brought an audience with him that was okay with him exploring and experimenting all the time because he had such success with it. One of his best experiments, Adam, you can probably tell a story about When Doves Cry.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. He did this on a few songs. Supposedly when he was mixing the song, so all the pieces have been recorded in the production, and mixing is one of the last things. And, you know, they're like pulling things up and down. He's trying to get the right levels. And he just said, mute the bass. So he turned the bass off. So who knows what it was? I've still never heard the version. But, you know, the version that came out is just, you know, kick drum and it's like a clap drums and, you know, a little synth patch, some guitar leads and tons of vocals, right? There's no bass. There's no bass line. There's no doom, 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 or whatever it would have been. And that's arguably one of the things that made the song jump out more. Because you know, you take something out, you can, like, the other elements come more to the foreground. The other song that happened with, I think, is Tambourine, which is a little more obscure of a song, but it's really, there's like major elements just totally missing from it. And it's also what makes it kind of eerie and unique.
All right, let's do it. Let's do When Doves Cry. Gabe Moline, you talk about how he would get on stage and say, I'm not going to play my hits, but that's also because he was so prolific. He could play so many things.
Yeah.
And he also wrote so many songs for others as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people are still surprised when I say that he wrote Nothing Compares to You, the song that Sinead O'Connor made so famous.
Beautiful song.
I thought The Family made it famous.
The Family made it famous.
no, well, I'm just...
yeah. When You Were Mine, Cyndi Lauper, that was a Prince song. I Feel For You, Chaka Khan recorded that and made it a big hit. You know, and he had a relationship with his hits, I think, that was dependent on the setting. The last time he was here in the Bay Area, he played two shows at the Paramount Theater. I saw one of those. And then at the Oracle Arena that Boots was at. And it was just him and a piano. And because he had this new challenge, the set list was just packed with all of his hits, but he was playing them in, you know, he would play like an Art Tatum version of one of his songs, or he'd do these big arpeggios up and down the keyboard, or hop on top of the piano during Kiss and dance a little bit. I mean, it was a new thing for him. So they were like, he could revisit his friends that were wearing new outfits or something.
And I think that was a big part of why his music changed so much, is that he had to make sure that he was excited about it.
Yeah.
And that he realized that was the big key to making anyone be able to feel your music. And so that made him have to change it. Like I'm sure he toured for a couple years playing the Purple Rain album. Was like, okay, I need, I'm tired of this. You know, I need to do something else. And but I think as far as songs that he wrote for other people, one thing that needs to be talked about is that he was a master of theater. He created a whole nother group that was his nemesis that we actually believed that was the time. And he was actually writing the songs and doing the background vocals for it. And we actually thought, and it was led by his cousin, Morris Day. But we actually, as kids, thought, oh, okay, or which side are you on? Oh. You like the time or you like Prince? Uh-huh. You know, and he had created this whole thing that was a beef in the early 80s that made people listen. And the time was a little bit more, you know, macho than his, and you know, the and misogynist in ways that he wasn't. And so he was the counter to that. And so, you know, it was and we all like, and even through Purple Rain, we saw Purple Rain and was like, oh yeah, you know, your kids, you don't know that you don't think about that's written and that they're friends or whatever. Yeah. But
he created the other group in the movie too.
Yeah.
Vanity Six.
Exactly.
Yeah. Torben in San Francisco. Hi, Torben.
Hi. Yeah, my good friend Hector Lizardi was a road manager for Prince, and he told me a story about a rule that they had. You weren't supposed to look at him when you were on stage. All the stagehands were not supposed to look at him. And one day Hector just turned and looked at him, and there was a couple seconds pause, and Prince broke face and said, okay, you got me.
That's amazing.
Well, Torben, thanks for sharing that story. Let's go to Phil in San Francisco. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I was introduced by Prince by my 11-year-old daughter. She's 44 years old. I was 37. I'm 71 now. And after that, I was so impressed. I went to the show. I couldn't get anybody to go to the show with me. And after that, I bought the 8-track. And my daughter married a guy that they loved, Prince, and they went to all his concerts. They went to Las Vegas, and after the first show, they went to the second show. My son-in-law says, you only live once. In fact, they were so distraught. He works for a tech company. They allowed him to stay home and remember, and Channel 7 found out about it and interviewed them. And I just treasure that time with my daughter.
Aww. Well, thanks, Phil, for sharing that. We've asked people to complete this thought, Prince, you were my. And Julie writes, Prince is the Mozart of our generation. Michelle says, Prince, you were my music evolution. A listener emails, I was smiling to myself listening to the folks on NPR trying to analyze and summarize Prince's body of work while ignoring the sexually rebellious songs that got black teens and black college kids listening, starting with Soft and Wet from his first album to I Want to Be Your Lover and Head. His first four albums, For You, Prince, Dirty Mind, and Controversy, laid down the gauntlet for his artistic freedom. He kept black student parties at Stanford thumping. He was the soundtrack for my college years in the 1980s. I will miss him. Another listener asks, who were Prince's own musical influences?
Mm. Definitely Earth, Wind, and Fire. I've heard him talk about that in interviews. It's not something that he would really talk about a lot. But then in his tunes, I mean, he would call things out in his songs. Like he mentions Joni Mitchell. And like he'll do this thing where he says, you know, he's like setting a picture for him and this date that he's going to have with this lady. And he's like, he'll say, like, we'll put on some, you know, whatever. And so, like, obviously that's him saying, like, I'm a big fan of Joni Mitchell if you're going to, like, put on a Joni Mitchell album, right? Mm-hmm. But James Brown, just, like, all over the place, and especially in his live shows and dancing and everything. I mean, that's a huge one, right?
I mean, Boots, right? Obviously Chuck Berry was a big mm-hmm. influence for a lot of the music that came out in the early 80s by him. Sly and the Family Stone actually kind of had an early version of, you know, the mixture of things that Prince had. Because Prince had, you know, stuff that was undeniably from the canon of what's considered black music. And then he had some other stuff that was, you know, punk and rock and, you know, and he had a multiracial band, and that's like all the things that Sly Stone had, and you know, and he talked about that in various ways in interviews. So that was, but I once had a, you know, anytime I meet somebody that works with Prince, I'll get all the juice I can, and so one of his engineers one time, and, you know, this doesn't. But this was his view and what he said that Prince said. He said that on guitar, you know, at the time that he was working with them, it was all about Santana. On keyboards, it was about Gary Newman. And, you know, and on bass, of course, it was about Larry Graham. So, you know, you can hear even some of that Gary Newman, in, especially in the early 80s and you know.
Again, we're talking with Boots Riley, a musician. He's lead vocalist for The Coup, a filmmaker and Oakland activist. We're also talking with Gabe Moline, music editor and curator for KQED Arts, and Adam Thies, a band leader, a trombonist, a bassist, and he founded the San Francisco music collective Jazz Mafia. And we're also talking with you. If you want to join us, it's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. Our website is kqed.org/forum. And of course, you can also post your comments on Facebook and Twitter. Michael writes, it's great that Boots is on today, given that his DJ Pam had recently joined Prince's band on the road, Oakland representing on the Prince tour. Yeah. DJ Pam Funkstress, right? She was also with The Coup.
Yeah. She's been with The Coup from the beginning and then didn't tour with us much in the last, like, 10 or so years because of she has this restaurant that's Piccadilly in San Mateo. They do brunches on Sundays. But anyway, of course, if Prince asks you to go out, then you're going. And so that's what she did.
We were just talking about his influences. And I think also on the flip side of things, people are wondering, is there anybody like Prince now? Like, is there who is that? Cut, you know, that experimenter who's just out there really pushing the boundaries, really inviting us into new artistic worlds? Or
I hesitate to say it, but if you've ever seen the singer Miguel live, it's if you squint your eyes and you're in the back of the room, you feel like you're watching Prince. He's incredibly dynamic and really great. I'm not so sure that he is as talented as Prince was. And is as experimental as Prince was. But that's sort of the obvious answer. What were you going
to
say, Boots?
No, I mean, I don't have an answer to that. But what I would say is that I really like Miguel. And part of it is because I like Prince. And aesthetically, there's a lot of similarities. Yeah. But as far as the question of who's experimenting, putting a lot of these things, a lot of different things together that people at first are like, oh, why are they doing that? You know? Like, that person is not getting will not be getting promoted
by
the record labels, which are, you know, and if you notice, like, Prince's sound did start out his first album. He did, he was in the genre pretty much of what was there. And it only once he had a deal that was going to happen anyway, then he could experiment even more. I'm not saying that person isn't out there.
Right.
I can't think of who that is right now.
Let's go to Brian in Pittsburgh. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm about 10 years younger than Prince, so I'm exactly at that right age for his music to have been the wallpaper of my whole life. To me, Prince is really the gateway artist. As a white kid growing up in the suburbs, I listened to pretty straightforward pop and rock music from the radio that ranged from Barry Manilow to AC/DC. And then when Purple Rain came out when I was a sophomore in high school, that totally shocked me. I didn't like it at first, and then because it was on everywhere all the time, it started growing on me, and then I fell in love with it, and then it opened up this whole other world of music that I never really thought about, R&B and hip-hop and blues and jazz. To me, he's like marijuana is a gateway drug. Prince is the gateway musician for me.
Well, Brian, thanks for sharing that. You know, we just have a minute left. Wondering if folks could just give any quick final thoughts they want to leave our listeners with about Prince, about his impact. Gabe Moline, I'll start with you.
I can tell you that I'm an ordained minister via the internet. And every wedding that I've ever done, I've told the people getting married, I said, okay, I'll do your wedding, but the ceremony is going to start with these words. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Because why do you get married? To help get you through life. Why did Prince's music exist? It helped me get through life, for sure. And a lot of other people, too.
Boots Riley?
I would say that, you know, right now I have some sadness for myself in not being able to see more of his performances, or, you know, maybe being able to meet him at some point. But I really think Prince had a life well lived and didn't waste any time. And I don't really feel sorry for him. I mean, like, okay, job done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're out. Yeah. See you. I mean, and that's with a lot of love. I mean, you know, when you look at what you want to do with your life and how you want to do it, he did that. He was able to communicate with millions of people.
Adam Thies, last thought.
I couldn't agree with Boots more. And his music and his legacy will inspire people, you know, for as long as the planet's here. So that couldn't be more of a crowning achievement to have.
Well, Gabe Moline, Adam Thies, Boots Riley, thanks so much for sharing your reflections today. Mm-hmm. We go out with Let's Go Crazy.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.